The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So today, I'm going to start with a story. A Zen monk by the name of Tozan was walking with his disciple, and they were walking along a river. And they saw a frog. And two crows also saw the frog, and they both dove for it and attacked it and pulled it apart, as because each of them was trying to devour this little frog. And the disciple said to Tozan, "Master, why does it come to this?" And Tozan replied, "It is for your benefit, Venerable One." Now, when I first heard that story, which was a long time ago when I first heard it, I was perplexed. Why would Tozan say that this was for your benefit? I did not understand it, and so I did what Reverend Master Jiyu recommended to all of us in the beginning and right now and whenever. If you come upon something that is said to you and you don't understand it, put it on the back burner. Now, what that means is you imagine your mind is a stove. And so something is difficult for you, and you put it back on the back burner to slowly cook. You give it time to just simmer. I have to say that when I first came to training, there were lots and lots of pots on the back burner. And it took a long time for a number of them to cook. And Tozan's remark, "for your benefit," was one of those that took a long time. But it did come to cook. Now, some of us are brought to training. We come to training. We come to the Dharma because either we are hurting or the world is hurting, and we need help in how to deal with the suffering of the world. Why are conditions the way they are? This brings a number of us to the Dharma for answers to find that out. In our world right now, there are seemingly, and maybe it's because everything is on the news and we all know it, or maybe it actually is increasing, but there's seemingly tons of things to be concerned about, to be worried about, to be suffering about. We have millions of people migrating to get away from war, famine, or just terrible conditions. They cannot stay in their homeland. They cannot stay anywhere. And they are traveling around the earth looking for homes. And, as we know in our own country and elsewhere, so what it means is there's lots of homeless people, which is really disturbing. It's really sad not to have shelter. It hurts our hearts. On top of that, there's food insecurity, and a lot of people are hungry, live with hunger every day, can't feed their children enough food. These are things that are very difficult. These conditions really are disturbing. That's just a few. There's racial injustice and suppression and oppression. This occurs in our own country. It occurs in the world. There are always one group that's trying to oppress another. And our poor environment, as we all know, there's all this pollution and there's extinction going on and clear cutting of our forests and the Amazon, which is releasing more carbon dioxide, so it's contributing to the global warming and the climate crisis we're having. So there's just lots. On top of that, people are not being respectful to one another. Something as simple as just being kind to another person is getting rarer and rarer, and people are disrespecting, dehumanizing other beings. And this is disturbing. People have all these different views on how things should be done. And instead of saying, well, let's find our common ground, they're more and more polarized. So that in itself is really difficult. We have overpopulation. We have violence on the rise, both homicides and domestic violence. And there's COVID going on also that's not going away. So there's all these things that are happening in our world. And then on top of all that, we don't have enough water. And so there's becoming, this is the next crisis that's looming, is water, precious water. And it's been wasted and not stewarded over in a sensible and beneficial way for everyone. So I'd say the world is besieged to the max. And what we are seeing is that this affects us and all other beings. I mean, how can you not see this? Everyone, for the most part, has a certain angst because of things. So now, let's take Tozan's comment for your benefit. Why did he say that? Because he wasn't, the frog getting eaten, torn apart right in front of you. How could that be for our benefit? And I hope this talk will answer that, so don't hang in there. It is actually a very important question, and I believe that the answer to it positively can impact our life. So if we're willing to go deeper into it. Now, I'd like to start with the Buddha, because the Buddha actually had a similar thing. When he was a young prince still living in the monastery, still living in the palace, had a very sheltered life. And his father wanted him to become a ruler. And he had an inclination to and a sense that he wanted to help the world. But his father kept trying to distract him, not let him see what's really going on. So one day he said to his father, and he was in his late 20s, he said to his father, I want to go into town. If you want me to rule people, I need to see what the town is like. So the father said, of course, we'll do this. And he had all these people come and clean up the town. And his father deliberately said, if anybody's sick or dying, keep them away so he won't see this. However, you can't hide life. And so he did. As he went into town, he saw. The first person he saw was a sick person. And he got off the chariot and went over to the person and talked to them. And they were obviously suffering. And he got back on the chariot and he said to his charioteer, Chana. He said, Chana, what's wrong with that person? And Chana said, oh, that person is sick. And everyone gets sick. I thought, whoa, okay. So then he saw an old person. And that too, if you're used to seeing young people only, you see an older person and you see them struggling walking or a little confused about things or whatever. And that too was startling to the Buddha. And he said to Chana, he said, what's wrong with that person? And Chana said, oh, nothing, sir. This is what happens to everyone. And then the Buddha saw a person who was dying. And that really shocked him. And he said to Chana again, what's this? And Chana said, this is death, and it comes to everyone. No one escapes death. So here's the Buddha. You imagine the Buddha. The Buddha is, well, this was before he became a Buddha, but the prince, Siddhartha, was used to young people. He was used to luxurious, beautiful surroundings. And he meets and he sees these three sights. And he's He's shocked. It grabs his attention because he loves his wife. He loves his family. And to see that this is what's going to happen to everybody is a real shock to him. The fourth person he saw was a mendicant. And he asked Chana, what's that person? They're different. They're wandering around quietly. They're not the same. And Chana says, that's a mendicant. That's a monk. That person has stepped back from the world in order to find the spiritual truth. And the Buddha, that was it. The Buddha said, that's what I want to do. That's what I have to do. Because I love my family, I want to help them. And because I love people of this world, I want to help them. So the sights are really important. And the Buddha saw them, and to some extent that disciple saw it also when he saw the frog. This is death. This is something, a horrible death, something being torn apart just for food. And that is really important. And that's part of why Tozan said, this is for your benefit. Because we actually get helped when we look at the conditions of the world straight on. When we say, yes, this is coming. I can't change it. We love someone. No matter how much we love someone, we cannot keep them from not dying. Death is just something that's going to happen to all of us. If we live long enough, we're going to age. We are aging, always. And that aging brings its own set of conditions. And it's helpful to realize that. I think in our country there's a tendency when someone starts to age, we isolate them away from the family, from the community. And I think that's a sign of our discomfort with the sight. So being willing to look is the first step in understanding that response of for your benefit. Because anything that helps us reflect is actually for our benefit. And the truth is that most of us live with varying amounts of denial. We think, we know on some level, yes, someone's going to die. Yes, they're getting old. And then all of a sudden, it's right in our face. And so that being in our face is actually for our benefit. And we'll explore this more. So when I'm saying how important it is to look, I'd like to give you an example of how we don't look. There are a lot of homeless people in our country right now. And most people, when they are on the street, they ignore the homeless. They don't look at them. They don't see them. And actually, that's not good. That's denial. It's saying, this isn't me, I can't relate to this. But instead, if we looked and said, this could be me. This is a human being. This being wants to be happy as I want to be happy. This being wants to be free from suffering as I want to be free from suffering. So we see, when we look, our interconnectedness with all things. And I think that's really important. That's the beginning. It takes lots of practice, years of practice, to come to see everything is for our benefit. In 1960, Reverend Master Jiyu went, in the 60s, early 60s, she went to Japan to study and become a monk. And she was ordained in Malaysia, and then she went on to Japan. And when she got to Japan, she trained in an all-male monastery. This was less than 20 years after World War II. And she trained as a foreigner. They saw her as a person who was like the people that dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima. So she had this very powerful situation that she went into. And I'd like to read you what she says. The Wild White Goose is her diary. And I think it's really hard for us to understand how challenging it was that she was in this monastery by herself, the only female monk. She had a hard time finding a shower. I mean, there's lots of things she dealt with. So she says, "The only thing I can possibly do in order to learn anything is to accept in blind faith everything that is happening to me, believing that it is for my good, whatever it may be." And that has a footnote with it. And she says in the annotation, she says, "This is probably the most important sentence in the book from the point of view of someone who wishes to learn Zen. The two sentences which follow it are almost equally important." So I'll read you the two sentences. So she's saying she has to take everything for her good. "If I do anything else, then I shall always be saying that this person is good and that one is bad. I am here to get beyond the opposites. I must stop discriminating. Whatever happens, whether they like foreigners or not, I must see what they do as being intrinsically good at all times, even when it works against me." So that's pretty powerful. That's a very important sentence. And that's what I mean about training takes a long time. We have to really go into things to convert it, to say, oh, I've got to take things for my good. Now, I'm going to tell you on a practical level, I read that sentence. I read the Wild White Goose, many times when I was a lay trainee. Many, many times. And I probably read it every year. And I was a lay trainee for 20-odd years, so I read it a lot. So, because I found it very helpful, and it was constantly reminding me to do this very thing, watch my mind. Watch what I say. Watch how I take things. And I also have to say that it takes a really long time to transform our minds. These things arise over and over again. We're still human. We still feel hurt when someone says something strongly to us. And that's for our benefit if we use it and look at our own hurt and say, oh, okay, I'm hanging on to my view. So I think for our benefit is what we put in the rock tumbler of life. And when we do that, then we get this precious jewel. Now, I'm saying this because Reverend Master Jiyu not only had a first Kensho when she was in Japan, but when she came back and started our monastery and did some many years of training, she had what's called the third religious experience, the third Kensho. So I'd like to read what she says during that, one of her commentaries. So if you read the Wild White Goose, you see how much she struggled and how hard it was. And then she says in this, "How blessed are those seemingly dark years. I wrote of them in my diary, hoping that one day someone going to Japan would be given pause. I wanted no one else to be as hurt as I was. How wrong can a person be? Without the difficulties that I encountered in Japan and England, this seed of faith would have been weak and, when put to the test in the darkest place, could not have borne fruit. When reading through my diary, I know that I wanted to publish it for all the wrong reasons. Now perhaps it can be published so that those who read it may know the measure of faith needed to help them in their own darkest hour and learn to bless rather than curse adversity. For it is on adversity that the seed of faith, once truly planted by the penetration of heaven, Kensho, thrives. It is as rain to a plant. Adversity gives strength in the darkest hour and causes the one who has had Kensho to show certainty of action. So this is taking for your benefit to a very deep level. And if this seems like, whoa, this is really too much, just put it on the back burner. It just takes time to put it into practice. And that's okay. But it's in the mud of our daily life. That's a really good way, an excellent analogy to look at it. That if we continually see the mud that we're in daily life, that it's nourishing the lotus that we are and allowing it to eventually blossom. When you're in the mud of life, it's rarely clear what's going on. You don't, in the middle of a crisis, say, oh, yes, I'm deepening faith, which, of course, is for our benefit. When you're in the middle of a crisis, you're in the middle of a crisis, and it's hard, and you're struggling with it, and so on and so forth. And then, if we're lucky, we remember, oh, yeah, can I look at this as for my benefit? And sometimes we'll say, oh, no way. But we hold that, and then we keep looking, and then it becomes that way. Usually, if we're mindful and we're watching what goes on in our mind, both when we meditate and when we're just going through our daily life, we see often the 100th time, or maybe the 1,000th time, we've gone through the same reaction to things. It's so amazing to me. I've been training for years and years and years, and the same reaction still comes up. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I know you. I know you. I see you. And then you let it go. You realize, oh, I can look at this differently than my same reaction. So it's really helpful to know that it takes us time before we move out of our rut. And I've been told that Reverend Master Ju used to say that we often have to get really tired of our own suffering before we'll do something about it. And I found that very helpful because I am a little tired of some of my suffering, and it does do just what you're saying. I just kind of go, oh, there you go again. So it really chips away at our judgment of others. And actually, because we see how human we are, it gives us humility because it isn't ours to judge another and say, oh, look at them, they're not doing training. Because when we look at ourselves, we see, oh, how hard this is. And of course, people aren't training because they're frightened and it's too big of a leap for them at this point in their life, or whatever the reason. We just come at it from a different angle instead of judgment, which is very important. Now, I'd like to take for your benefit and look at it from yet another angle. Because I have to say that spiritually, I believe I came into existence. This is kind of like the reason I'm here, was to try to understand why terrible things happen in the world and how can we see it differently than just with horror and turning away from it. I really came in with that purpose. So I have spent my life reading about people who looked at the world differently, who had a different way of coming at it. And one of those people who's most influenced my life is Eddie Hilsum, who was a Dutch Jewish woman in her mid-30s during World War II. And of course, World War II, the Holocaust was going on, and in Holland, the Jews were gradually being restricted to areas, and just like they did, and then shipped off to Auschwitz and other concentration camps. So she wrote a diary. She kept a diary. And the first third of the book is actually quite painful to read because she's very selfish. You know, she's ordinary, just like all of us. She's thinking about herself. She's very self-obsessed. But she's got a good, sincere heart, and she goes through this physical, spiritual, psychological training with this mentor of hers. And she opens up and she becomes totally different. She really starts looking at herself, looking at her actions, looking at her mind. And it's beautiful to see. So she writes the journal, recording her deepening experiences. And at the end, she's in a transfer station, a barbed wire transfer station about to be shipped off. And she hands the journal to one of her friends and says, okay, you keep this. And so they did, and they eventually translated it and published it. You know, one of the most remarkable things about her was her friends would have hid her, and they told her that. Don't go to the transfer station. We'll pull you out. We'll hide you. And she said, no, I can't do that. Everybody, I'm Jewish. Everybody's being sent. I'm not going to stay back. It doesn't make any sense to me. And she said, and besides which, I want to be of help, and I'm going to go. And that's what she did. And the courage of that, to actually know you're going to be killed, because she did know what was going on, is really remarkable. So the journal I'm reading from is a book called An Interrupted Life, The Diary of Etty Hilson. So I'm going to read you several things that she wrote, because I found them really interesting. I hope you do too. So here she is. She says, we have to accept death as part of life, even the most horrible of deaths. And don't we live an entire life, each one of our days? Now, she had visions, and so what comes next is part of her vision, because she was in Amsterdam. But she says in this journal, I am in Poland every day, on the battlefields, if that's what one can call them. I often see visions of poisonous green smoke. I'm with the hungry, with the ill-treated, and the dying every day. But I am also with the jasmine tree and the piece of sky beyond my window. There is room for everything in a single life. It is a question of living life from minute to minute and taking suffering as part of the bargain. Suffering has always been with us. Does it really matter in what form it comes? All that matters is how we bear it and how we fit it into our lives. I can know everything and bear everything and grow stronger in the bearing of it, and at the same time feel sure that life is beautiful and worth living and meaningful despite everything. Then later, she also says, the main thing is that even as we die a terrible death, we are able to feel right up to the last moment of life, up to the last moment, that life has meaning and beauty. I don't fool myself about the real state of affairs, and I have even stopped the pretense that I'm out to help others. I shall merely help God as best I can, and if I succeed in that, then I shall be of use to others as well. And then the final thing, this was written in the transfer station, and she's talking about it. She says, how is it that this stretch of land surrounded by barbed wire and through which so much human suffering has flooded nevertheless remains inscribed in my memory as something almost lovely? How is it that my spirit, far from being oppressed, seemed to grow lighter and brighter there? And there among the barracks, full of the hunted and persecuted people, I found confirmation of my love of life. Not for one moment was I cut off from the life I left behind. There was simply one great, meaningful whole. So for me, I hope you see why I'm reading from Etty, because this is actually someone who took all of life for her benefit and used everything that happened for her benefit. The darkness of our thoughts, the transformation of our feelings, this is the Buddha land. It's not separate. And we have a scripture that says, we live in the world as if in the sky. And I think that's what it's saying. We take everything for our benefit, and we see the benefit of it. Allowing the difficult, the mud of life, to become the root of our lotus stem. When we look at this life with the Buddha's eyes, that is how we see things are for our benefit. All things become teachers, the painful and terrible things we see. I was on an Outward Bound trip when I was 25 years old, so that was a long time ago. And we were hiking and climbing cliffs for over 2 weeks in the Utah desert. Actually, the whole thing was over 3 weeks. At one point, we walked into an area that was completely devastated and destructed. It had been a clear cut that occurred in this forest. And because we had been in all this idyllic surroundings, and all of a sudden you walk into a clear cut, it was just horrifying. It literally felt like someone had clubbed me. You feel these things in your body. You cannot help. And I never forgot it. And in one sense, when something happens to you, then life is never the same. And that's not negative. That's actually positive, because it's like you've seen, and you can't pretend you haven't. And I think we become karmically linked to some of the things we see. And I have to say that clear cutting is always disturbing to me. And because at that time, it was very clear. I was not meditating even, but it was very clear to me that those trees were suffering. And I have no doubt. I felt it. And I felt the horror of the scene. It wasn't just me that was feeling that. So I want to make sure that no one walks away from this Dharma talk and goes up to someone whose dearest relative or their husband or partner or whatever, and they die, and you walk up and say, oh, it's for your benefit. Okay, no, don't do that. Please use great care with for your benefit, because it's really for us. Okay, we have to put it into practice. And sometimes maybe you can say it to someone, or you can encourage someone. Obviously, Tozan and that disciple, they had a very deep trust with each other, and he knew that the disciple would deal with what he was saying, wouldn't be horrified by it. So that's just really important. No matter how we prove it true for ourselves, it's for us. And then if it benefits someone, it's often in unseen ways. So we have to be very careful how we go with the truth. Reverend Master Jiu used to say that. The concept of putting something on the back burner is actually really helpful, because it gives us time to process, to explore, to train with something that we don't understand. So that's a very important concept. And the process helps us deepen our faith and trust. So by practicing stillness through our meditation, by sitting with serene reflection, we transform the suffering of this world and of our lives. And when we do that, how can everything not be for our benefit? It is. And I just hope that this Dharma talk was for your benefit. So thank you very much.